Good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. I'm Doug Fain. On today's program, we're going to the southwest corner of Jessamine County. Talk about a business that started off as a mushroom farm. Highbridge Springwater and Kentucky Underground Storage was started by a fellow named Bill Griffin. We'll be talking to his daughter, Linda, right after this word from one of our fine sponsors at Jess FM.
Hall's Farm and Feed is the only locally and family-owned farm and feed store in Jessamine County, offering a wide selection of farm, feed, pet, yard, and garden products. Custom work including sodding, seeding, and strawing, hydro seeding, yard fertilization, and weed control, and pasture renovation. Hall's Farm and Feed carries a full line of Southern States products and feed, as well as Purina and Triple Crown feed products for all animals. They are the home of Hall's Fencing, providing for all your fencing needs as well. Stop by Hall's Farm and Feed today at 201 Etter Drive in Nicholasville. Hall's Farm and Feed, providing Jessamine County and surrounding communities with all your farm, estate, and residential needs.
Good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. Glad to have you as we continue to learn more about our county, people, places, and things. We're going to travel to the southwest corner of Jessamine County today. We're going to go down toward High Bridge, and just before you get, I guess, to that area, with the bridge exactly, you will find a business who I think, if I've done my research, has been in since the early 80s, opened by a fellow named Bill Griffin. With us today, one of his five, is that right, daughters? Bless his heart.
Right.
Is Linda Griffin. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Glad you're here as we learn about High Bridge Springwater. That is become a business that is known so far and wide, especially in this state, and I'm sure beyond, and we'll find out the extent of that. But it's not just water that you pump out down there. You've got other services too, I know. We'll talk about that as well. I guess the best place to start is to talk about your dad. Is he the one that came up with this idea? What brought him to think that I can go to this hole in the ground, this temperature controlled place, and bring this water out? What's the story there with him?
I still shake my head thinking about how it all evolved through Dad.
Yeah.
Dad had some thoroughbred horses in the early 80s, and he boarded them at a training center on Paris Pike that's still there. But in the 80s, it was a training center with the track. It had a restaurant. And he would go there to observe the horses. Mm-hmm. And he would notice that there's a big truck of muck being hauled away. And, you know, these mines you just can't define. But so in his mind, he thought, I wonder why someone's paying to get rid of that. Because in those days, you could just go burn it.
Yeah.
So why are you paying to haul it away?
Yeah.
So one day, he followed the truck. And that truck drove to High Bridge, down the hill, and into the rock quarry. And he learned they were growing mushrooms. There's a company there called High Bridge Mushrooms.
And so they're using this as a breeding ground for the mushrooms.
Correct. And his career had been in the wholesale grocery business. Mm-hmm. His father and Mr. Chestnut started a company called Laurel Grocery Company that's still in existence today.
Okay. So let me stop you right there at that point, and maybe let's talk about personal matters with your dad. Tell me where he was born, who his family was, and kind of his life up to the point that he would have gotten married. Let's do that far.
Right. He was born in London, Kentucky, mm-hmm. which was the big city, and the little community he lived in was called East Bernstadt, mm-hmm. Kentucky.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've heard of that.
That's where he grew up. And in that community, he and another gentleman, Mr. Chestnut, mm-hmm. Dad's father.
Okay.
And Mr. Chestnut started a wholesale grocery company called Laurel Grocery Company, mm-hmm. which is still in existence today. It's one of the few still independently owned family businesses in the wholesale grocery industry. As you know, they're all, you know, the big guys.
Right.
So it's 80-something years they've been in business.
Oh, wow.
So when Dad grew up, that's what he did. In those days, you just went to work for your dad, and, mm-hmm. and there was no question. But he did go away to school, didn't graduate, joined the Navy instead, came back to Kentucky and worked for Laurel Grocery Company his career.
Okay. So somewhere in there, he got married, I guess.
He got married after the Navy, went uh-huh. to UK for a couple of years, dropped yeah. out. He said, I know what I'm going to do.
So go in the grocery business.
I don't need to yeah. finish. But he met my mother, who was from Lexington.
Okay.
And this is an interesting little side bit. My yeah. mother's family brewed beer.
Oh, yeah.
In Kentucky, they're Germans. They came down from Cincinnati, yeah. and her grandfather operated the Lexington Brewery.
Really?
In Lexington, that beautiful old building they tore down in the 40s. And her father worked there. And then they got out of, along about Prohibition, they got out of the beer business and went into the dairy business. And her father and his brother Carl managed and owned Ashland Dairies.
Yeah.
And they had ice cream. Dixie ice cream.
Oh, yeah.
So for years, you know, around Lexington, they made Dixie ice cream. So she grew up in a family business of ice cream and beer, Catholic, and my father grew up in East Bernstadt, wholesale grocery business, and Baptist. And how they how they ever combined
That's like oil and vinegar, isn't it?
It's a mystery today how that all worked.
Did they meet at UK?
They met at UK.
As students there.
Yes.
So they decided to get married, but you said that was after the Navy.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then, I guess, decided to start a family.
In London. She moved to London.
Five of you girls?
Five girls. There's a set of twins in there.
Oh, yeah.
So they had five teenage girls at one time.
I mean, you just shake your head, don't you? Well, I've got two daughters. Luckily, they're 7 years apart, so I didn't have them teenage at the same time. But I can't imagine five.
Five daughters.
Of course, things were a whole lot different in that era than they are now. But still, that's amazing to raise five daughters.
And
now,
so we grew up, though, in the small business family, too. You know, as we would go to the Hope Grocery Company and work in the summers. And I mean, we grew up when you needed school supplies. You went to Laura Grocery and you got your notebooks and your pencils. But you learned from his experience, too. I remember he would always say, you know, if you go to a grocery store, you park at the back of the parking lot. When you go in, if you see somebody needs help bagging groceries, you step right up and bag them. You know, if you need to see something dirty, you clean it. Nobody needs to tell you that. We all grew up in that mind frame.
We'll talk a little bit later once we get into the current day business about the rest of your sisters and maybe what they're doing and how they're involved. So the girls come along and it's then I guess we can finally get to the point to where he follows this truck to High Bridge hauling this horse stuff to find out they're growing mushrooms. Now, once he gets down there and sees that, does a light bulb just go bam, and that's how it came about?
Well, at that point, we were all either in college or out and gone. So we didn't know anything about this, of course. We weren't at home all the time. So he follows this truck and decides, seeing the place and having the background in warehousing, he knew that that was a huge warehouse, too. He understood the innate advantages of being underground. And he also knew that mushrooms were just beginning to grow as a business. This was in the, you know, mid-70s. So at that point, if you'll think back, salad bars were just kind of coming on. And he knew that the closest mushroom growers were in Pennsylvania, where Austin Purina grew mushrooms up there. So, of course, he probably did have a light bulb moment going, oh, heck, I could take advantage of this and sell them to Laura Grocery and have somebody right in central Kentucky growing mushrooms. So he bought into the company as a stockholder. Again, none of the other, my mother nor any of us had any idea.
He now, where did he live at this time?
London.
He lived in London, and he has bought part of a business in Highbridge, Kentucky, growing mushrooms.
Underground.
Underground mushrooms, yes.
And so that goes along for a few months, and unbeknownst to him, there were some other things going on in the corporation that he didn't know about. The owners were out of state. And again, if you'll think back, this is the 70s, so you have kind of hands-off owners. You have a business in Highbridge, Kentucky, working underground, and so you're employees might not be doing everything that they were
paid
to be doing.
Exactly. Mushrooms not the priority at all times.
No, maybe not. So the company went bankrupt. And he decides, or he comes to the auction in Nicholasville. It's a bankruptcy, you know, absolute auction. And in his mind somewhere along the way, he's decided that, you know, there's something you could do with this place.
He didn't want to continue mushrooms, though.
He thought about it, yes. Yeah. He was. That was, I think originally that's what he thought he would do. And he bid against Clay Corman for this place. They were the only two bidding on it. And according to Clay, he was either going to mine more limestone or store some equipment of his underground. But I guess he decided he didn't want to pay as much as Dad thought it was worth. So Dad
bought it.
Bought it. Now, here's another interesting story, and I love this part of it. So it was absolute auction, right? And when you buy something at absolute auction,
it's
you're expected to pay.
Exactly.
Right.
It's absolute. That's the word. That's
absolute.
Why I said it. And not only do you have to pay, the price is what they have to take.
Correct.
It's just set in stone.
It's no gray area there
right.
at all. So he wins the auction, and he goes, okay, I'll be right back. And he goes across the street to First National Bank, goes in, introduces himself.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Griffin, I'm from London, Kentucky. I'm with Laura Grocery, and I need to borrow some money. And they were like, oh, we're familiar with Laura Grocery, yes. And they talked a few minutes and said, our loan committee meets Wednesday, and we'll talk it over and get back to you. And
this would have been in the 70s.
Thank you,
For people that listen to us that have been around here for a while, we are talking about people like Leo Wild and Brian Risk. And those are the people that were at the bank at that time. Okay.
Correct. So he goes, okay, thank you very much. And he goes back to the corner, crosses the street to Farmers Bank.
Oh, Mr. Dale's
open.
Mr.
Dale's,
Jeter, yes.
And comes in and goes through the same story. And they say, okay, yes, we're familiar with Laura Grocery. How much do you need? And he told them. And they said, well, when do you need it? And he said, right now.
I just bought it.
And I'll be darned, they gave it to him.
Oh, really?
They wrote him the check, said, come back in and sign the paperwork. He said, okay. He goes back across the street, gives the check to the auctioneer.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, you just slap your face going, how in the world?
Well, that's the way
does that
business
happen?
Back
that's
then.
That's the way you did it.
And they trusted him, and he trusted them, and it worked
and
out.
And we banked with Farmers Bank for over a decade after that.
Yeah.
You know, we borrowed lots of money. And,
right.
And, but you had a relationship from that
exactly.
kind of
out of trust.
Transaction.
So he goes and he pays the check, and now he's sitting here. How much acreage is that is involved?
We have 96 acres above ground, underground, 32 open acres.
Open acres. So
including the big columns.
Okay, so he's got this big underground cave. Can you call it a cave?
A quarry,
okay.
We call it a cave,
quarried all this rock. And it's grown mushrooms. And there it sits.
There it is.
He's in it now.
Yes.
And he still hadn't told you guys.
No. We have no idea.
Did his wife know?
No.
Your mother? She didn't even know he'd bought this hole in the ground.
No.
Okay. So that would have been an interesting conversation when he got home, I guess. Guess what I did today, honey?
Yes. It was a few years later that she learned about it. Yes.
How do you keep some... For years.
Who's going to find you underground and hybrid?
Oh, my goodness.
You know, you'd have to follow his car to know where he was going.
So he's continuing to do the grocery.
He's continuing to do the grocery.
What did he do with his quarry?
Well, so that business continued, and he decided that maybe this isn't quite what I want to do. I don't know much about growing mushrooms.
Yeah.
So he decided he would sell it. And through whatever means, I don't even know, actually, he got a response from the largest mushroom grower in the world, and they were from France.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were very interested. They came over with their attorneys, and there were translators, and Tom Dupree downtown was helping Dad, and he had a funny story about how they were so excited when they saw his name, they thought he spoke French. He didn't... He didn't know a word of French. So the deal was progressing. And at that time, François Mitterrand was elected in France.
Mm-hmm.
And he stopped much of the outgoing capital investments in France. And it happened to touch that deal. So the deal stopped midstream.
Yeah.
Just boom. It's over.
So he's still standing there wondering, what am I going to do?
Now he's really glad he probably didn't tell my mother yet.
I bet.
Because he's thinking, okay, so here we are. And at some time again during that time work, we're all off in our own little worlds as, 20-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
He decides he's going to incorporate Kentucky Underground Storage Company.
So that came first.
That came first. And his initial idea, again, from his background in the wholesale grocery business, he knew that they were storing non-fat dry milk all over the country because dairy price support was still going.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember in the schools, commodity butter, cheese, was everywhere.
The cheese was some of the best
cheese
you ever tasted.
Yes.
Absolutely.
It's what made those biscuits so good.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
So he knew that they were paying a lot of money to store this around the country. And because the quarry was temperature controlled, it was already built, really.
Mm-hmm.
He thought, I could store that a lot cheaper underground than you could above ground. So he incorporated Kentucky Underground Storage. in February of 1982. Mm-hmm. Then started the quest of getting a warehouse and getting approved as a federal government warehouse.
Yeah.
And it was at that time my sister and I, my youngest sister and I, Mary, happened to cross paths in London, Kentucky over that summer. She was on her way to the East Coast for a job, and I was on my way to Texas. A friend of mine's father worked at NASA. Oh, I can get you a job. Okay. You know, you don't know anything at that
right.
age. So we ended up in London, and Dad said to us one day, hey, girls, let me show you something.
Oh, here it is.
I got something to show you.
Did your mom know yet?
Not at that point.
You all knew before she did.
Well, I think it was just that day.
This was the unveiling.
Right. This was the unveiling.
Wow.
He didn't invite her on the first trip.
He wanted to get you all on his side, didn't he?
Exactly.
Ah, there you go. Daddy's girls.
Daddy's girls. So we actually drove with him to High Bridge.
Yeah.
And I knew where Wilmore was, High Bridge, because of the bridge. Now, if you grew up around Kentucky, you went to High Bridge and did stupid stuff. So we go through Wilmore and we keep going. And at that time, you know, High Bridge wasn't the type area quite that it is now.
Exactly.
It was a little rougher.
It was.
So we turn into this little gravel road and down a hill, and it was like, well, this is strange. There are concrete block walls that come out from this big metal door. And Mary and I are going, what the heck? And so he gets his key, and there's a padlock on the door. He unlocks it and, you know, opens this big door, and there's total darkness. I mean, there's nothing there. We were just, well, this is strange. And he drives right in. And you can't see much because there are no lights. There were no lights at the time. So you saw the outside light coming in. But you could see right away this was a big place.
Yeah.
This wasn't a little cave.
Yeah.
And it was like, what the heck? What are you going to do with this, Dad? I think we probably said, whose is this? And he said, well, it's yours. He used to say that all the time.
Did he tell you at that time how long he had had it?
Not until... no.
So...
No.
If you had been with anybody else, you'd probably thought, oh, we're going to get killed. We're going in here to get, you know, luckily it was your dad.
Yeah.
But even then, you've got to be thinking,
pretty rough.
Dad, what, you've lost your mind? What is going on?
What's happening in here?
Yes, exactly.
And so we asked him, he said, it's mine. We were like, well, what are you going to do with it? He was like, well... Not sure yet, but we got a storage company.
Okay.
Wow. And that's when he kind of told us, maybe not that day, but about the dry storage business and non-fat dry milk storage business. And he said to us, would you like to help? So Mary and I are thinking over the summer, sure.
This was in 1982.
Yes.
Been a long summer, hadn't it?
Been a long summer. Who would ever have known? Yes.
Did either one of you happen to say, Dad, what's Mom?
Well, we did say, have you told Mom? And he said, not yet. And you're exactly right. I think he wanted to get more people.
He did.
On his side.
And I'm assuming that at some point, I hope that one of you said, how long have you had this? Did that come out?
I feel like we did at some point because we got the history of the mushroom farm and stuff. But it wasn't right away.
That whole conversation would have been classic on video. It would have been amazing to see.
To go back to London, Kentucky and tell my mother that I bought a hole in the ground at High Bridge.
So he wants you and Mary, that's right, you and Mary,
yes,
to come work for him.
To help him.
To help him. Oh, that's what it was, help him.
You want to help me.
With the storage business.
Yes.
Okay.
And it was more of, do you want to help me clean this place up and get it ready and you know, what the heck, sure.
Okay.
I don't have anything else to do. So we swept the cave floor.
Yeah.
We picked up stuff and, I mean, there was nothing, again, there was nothing in there but a concrete block room where they packaged the mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And there were little light bulbs kind of strung along the side of some of the columns in the very front,
mm-hmm,
you know, and that was it. So, and we found, you know, they used to strip cars back there. So Mary and I would drive up from London every day to work, and we were pretty grungy, you know, because you're working underground.
Right.
And the sheriff would come in and toot his horn, and we'd come from where we were in the cave, and he said, I'm going to go look for a stolen car. And we'd go, okay. You know, and there were some back there that people would drive in and strip and leave them.
This is amazing. I've been here all my life, and I haven't heard some of this stuff. This is wild.
Well, and in the back, too, there it was a party location, too, if you can imagine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So there was old couches and graffiti on the columns. You could see where they used to have a fire and who knows what else.
Okay, let's stay on this storage road just for a moment because I want to talk a little bit more about that before we get into the water.
Okay, and that does lead right to the water.
Yeah,
but yes,
so that'll work out perfect. You said 32 acres total underground.
Correct.
Of open space. Can you just give us some facts and figures about your storage company now? What has all that led to? If we were to come in and could go through your place without worrying about anybody bothering us, we wouldn't find stripped cars and we wouldn't find that stuff, but what would we find on storage in?
We had a map of the quarry with the columns on it, and my dad, again, would sit in London, Kentucky, and he drew an area that we wanted to enclose because it was very evident that there was a humidity issue. Because we started going in the summer, and in the summer you had the most issue with humidity.
Now, the temperature stays the same,
right?
But the humidity fluctuates
quite
a lot?
Yes.
Okay.
When it's hotter outside than it is inside, you have a lot of condensation.
Okay.
You have a lot of dripping, and you can even see kind of a haze in the aisle where the humidity
hangs.
So
that's what you really got to worry about.
So that's, he knew for storage, that had to be controlled.
Mm-hmm.
So he drew an area that we would enclose, which we did with these curtains, and they came from Alpha Structures, used to be here in Nicholasville, and they were originally manufactured for tennis courts that you would put on a tennis court and the air would hold them up.
Yeah.
So that's what we bought in 1982.
And that helped to the control.
So it was just a moisture barrier in this area we wanted to store things in.
Yeah.
So he would draw the area in London and send my sister and I underground and tell us to mark this area. So we had a 50-pound bag of lime, cut a hole in it, and put it on an old luggage carrier. You know, the old-time ones that you really had to strap your suitcase to? Well, we strapped that bag of lime to it. And then we would count the columns, you know, four columns up, okay.
Did we not have spray paint back then?
Oh, it didn't even come to mind. I don't know why, because many walls had been graffiti spray painted. And I think Dad always looked at us and thought, oh, let them go. It'll keep them busy.
Wow, okay. So you marked all this off with lime. That's amazing.
Turns out it's a good thing we did that, because at one point we get home. I mean, this takes us weeks to do this.
Sure.
He has erased one whole side of the storage company and decided to expand it another aisle. We were like,
that did work out.
Oh. So we would go up and go sweep up the old line and put down the new line. And we enclosed this area, 250,000 square feet, with these curtains. So the next step was to find out, how do we maintain the humidity? How do we control that? And in Kansas City, Kansas, there are a lot of underground facilities there. And so Dad, who knows how, somehow contacted an engineer who designed dehumidifiers for that underground industry.
For that type of space.
That type of space. He knew what he knew what he was dealing
with.
So he comes to High Bridge, and we meet him, and we're showing him around. And the first thing he says after the walkthrough of, you know, pretty small area, because, again, it's total dark. You're walking around with the flashlight. He says, well, you need to control that water.
Did y'all even know there were water there?
Well, we knew it was there. We hadn't thought twice about it.
Was it like a stream?
It comes out of the ceiling.
Oh,
the quarry had blasted into an underground aquifer.
Oh, and so it's dripping. Just dripping or pouring?
Well, it's pouring. It's pouring out of the ceiling.
Just into a basin type thing, I guess?
And the rock company, Benny Rainwater, he remembers the day they hit that water.
Yeah.
He said, they called him and said, you better get down here quick.
Yeah.
So they blasted a drainage ditch. And so for all the years they mined after they hit the water, it just flowed outside. And so we just, I don't know, we didn't
think about it.
Ditch and the water flowed out. And so what?
But that was causing more problems with the humidity.
He said, you got to control the water.
Light bulb started then, didn't it?
Well,
for somebody.
Not for my sister and I. We were like, okay. And so in the weeks following that conversation, Dad said at one point, again, if you remember, we're driving an hour and a half one way to London 7 days a week. He goes, girls, why don't we bottle that water? 1982.
I mean, who thought of that?
I didn't even know there was bottles.
Exactly.
The only bottled water I remember, I've told you, was that little green Perrier bottle. And my picture of that was rich women by the swimming pool.
Exactly.
Drinking their little Perriers.
Yeah.
That's all. That was the only image
I had of bottled water. See bottled water.
It was not in the grocery store, except distilled water with the ironing supplies.
Okay.
You put distilled water in your iron.
So there was a
one facing of gallon distilled water, and that was it in the grocery store.
Is that what gave him the idea?
Well, I've often wondered that, what gave him that idea.
When he said to you, let's bottle it, was he thinking drinking?
Yes. Yes.
But you don't know...
Where did that come from?
Well, the same place that buying this to start with came from.
Same place following that truck amok.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. That's that entrepreneur.
Amazing.
Brain.
So then I guess he had to figure out how do we do it.
Right. Well, so then he had to convince us he was serious. We were like, oh, yeah, right, Dad. Okay, yeah.
At any point in time, has your mom thought he's totally lost his mind? He probably thought that often.
Yes.
But it didn't.
She was like, you're doing what?
The man knew what he was doing.
Well, maybe. The man had an idea. I'll put it that way.
Well, he had a good idea. It's worked out all right.
Yeah. He kept saying it to us. Mm-hmm. And I remember the drive home with Bear and I, and Dad wasn't with us that day, and we were like, he's serious. I mean, we were like, what are we going to do? I mean, I think he really wants to do this. Mm-hmm. And we were like, okay. I mean, what else are you going to say, 26 and 28?
Exactly.
You don't know squat.
Yeah, right.
So, indeed, we started by joining the International Bottled Water Association. And in 1982, that was a group of other small family-owned businesses around the country.
Yeah.
And they were all very helpful. You know, everybody, Dad went to a convention in San Diego. And from there, you learned who the suppliers were, mm-hmm. you know, where you got the equipment. And, you know, the cap guy would say, oh, here's where you get your bottles. And the filler guy would go, oh, well, here's where you get your pump. Mm-hmm. You know, so mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. that connection through the Bottled Water Association, he organized the first gallon filler that we put in that little concrete block building where they packaged the mushrooms. Talking about a wing and a prayer. I mean,
this is amazing.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
We had no idea.
So you started with gallons. For
and
drinking.
My sister, myself, Dad, and Mom bottled it. Dad sold it. Dad was a heck of a salesman. He could sell anybody anything. And then we came back and invoiced it.
Do you remember that first year, maybe, how many gallons you would have produced? Now, this is all coming from the underground.
Through a system called reverse osmosis.
Yeah, I was going to ask. Well, you have to do something. You can't just put it straight in the bottle.
You could, but at the time, many people we found were drinking bottled water for medical reasons, and kidney stones was one of them. So the RO that we put in takes out everything but a trace of minerals.
So that's
what we started.
And I'm assuming that there are different ways, for lack of a better word, to make bottled water. You all chose this particular reverse osmosis.
Right.
Okay.
It is unusual for a spring water to go through RO. And that's why you'll see on our label drinking water. We have to put drinking water on there because we alter the natural state of the spring.
Okay.
Now, many times when you see drinking water, that will indicate that it's a municipal source that has then been what they call polished. You know, they send it through an RO or a distiller and add minerals back. Mm-hmm. But ours, even though it says drinking water, it's a, you know, it comes straight from the earth.
So there are waters out there that people can purchase different places now that could have come from a municipal. And I'm assuming it's somewhere on the label you're going to find that.
Now you will
if you'll pay attention, you can really find out. So this is a pure, from God's green earth water.
Yes.
This isn't going through a city's purification system or anything like that. This is the stuff.
Correct.
Okay. And are you all, I guess, are water, not say you all, I mean the water industry. I'm assuming that there has to be some kind of clarification on the label showing that. Is that right?
And that, yes, that came about, though, in the mid-90s.
Okay, quite a bit later.
When we started, you know, bottled water was such a small industry.
Sure.
That you didn't have those regulations. Mm-hmm. But as it grew, you had companies taking advantage of it some that would have, you know, natural mountain water, and it was bottled in Florida.
Yeah, right.
You know, so the labeling got a little... skewed.
Right.
So that's when FDA came in and made some of the regulations that the source has to be identified as municipal or natural.
Good for them. Okay, so I asked, do you have any idea how many gallon you put out that first year?
That first year.
Approximate. And I'm going to compare it to now.
I could do it more than a bundle of empty gallon boxes. We would go through maybe one a day. That means that was like 56 cases of 6 1 gallon drinking.
So 300, 400, about 400 gallon a day. If you went every day. Yeah, right. So, you know, if you work 10 days a month, that's 4,000 and times 12 is 48. So what compared to today?
3 million.
Gosh, 3 million gallons.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about your business, unless something really weird happens, the source is always there.
Right. Right.
I mean,
now the biggest test of that was in 1988, and if you were around at that time, there was a drought of '88, and they were stopping car washes.
Yes, I remember that.
You could water your lawn every other day.
Yeah, according to your address or your name
or
something. Yeah,
correct. So it was a severe
drought. And you all felt that.
And we, that was the year we went from red to black.
Yeah.
Because I remember Dad said, we could sell every bottle we could bottle. And he said, you'll never have this situation again, that your only limiting factor is how much can you produce.
Right.
So every day, though, we went back to that spring, and looked up and went, oh my gosh, and it never stopped.
You got the gallons that you're producing early on. Now, take us to today. You all... In the past several years, I mean, you've got these size, which is, what, these
16.9 ounce.
You've got small ones I've seen. Mm-hmm. You've got water coolers everywhere in the... I mean, this thing has just exploded.
Right. We bottle in now 12 ounce, 16.9. That's a half liter. Mm-hmm. 1 liter, 1 gallon, 2.5 gallon, 3 gallon, and 5 gallon.
Wow. It just keeps coming
And we
up.
Started... The great thing about... how we started, you just add it as the need presents itself. I remember we were at a food show once in the early days. We just had gallons, and a lady from Richmond asked us, do you bottle in those big bottles, you know, that you put on that contraption? And I didn't even know what she was talking about.
Cooler.
And Dad looks at her and goes, oh, yeah, we do that. And, you know, Mary and I had learned that you always just smile. You know, when he's talking to someone, when you just smile and she walks off, we look at him and go, what was she talking about? No, we had no idea what they were.
Was she talking about the water coolers?
The five-gallon bottles.
So you started making them then?
We started making them. She was just grinning, going, yes, we do that. Well, when can I get some? And well, it'll be a little while. Let me get your name and number, and I'll let you know. We were like, what is he talking about?
You went from a family... I guess it's still family-owned, correct? Is your dad still living?
No, he died in 01.
Okay. And your five sisters, are they all involved?
They are all owners.
Okay. But are you the only one that's actively working?
I'm the only one left that goes underground every day.
Okay. You started, though, with you and your sister and him and eventually telling Mom and all the rest.
Right.
Today, how many employees do you have now?
Between both companies...
You're talking about the storage in the water.
Storage in the water. Well, the water company, I'll say we have 42. Maybe.
And that's people that work in there, bottling, and all the way to delivering.
Correct.
Because you see their trucks, you're everywhere.
Right.
And it's not only delivering these 16.9-ounce bottles we have in our hand, but it's also those water coolers that go to offices and places like that.
It's kind of like two different businesses, actually.
Yeah.
The 5 gallons come off our route trucks, and we will deliver them to your home or office.
Yeah.
The gallons and 2.5s and some of the small bottles, a lot of that goes through the wholesale grocery business.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Because they send semis underground, and they pick up there and then take it to their warehouse.
2001, you lost your dad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 17 years ago, there's been a lot of things done expansion-wise, I assume, in 17 years.
Well, expansion and contraction.
Yeah, well.
08, the you know, the recession of 08 hit us pretty hard.
Yeah.
And when people were looking to save money, that bottled water goes pretty fast.
I understand.
So, you know, we grew and grew and grew. The industry changed a lot through those years.
And through all of this, you now have, in the last few years, have had to compete against those contraptions you hook to your faucet and your sink that you make your own, if you will. A lot of things that you have to compete with. So then you have to get a little more inventive about what you do to help your business, I guess.
Well, we also do filtration now.
Yeah, okay.
We can do, if you would rather go that route, we've got filtration equipment. But we kind of, you know, through that consolidation of the industry, then the recession, we kind of kept our head low. People go, well, why don't you do carbonated water? Why don't you do flavored water?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? I know how to do water. I'm going to stick with that. And luckily enough, we made it through all that. And now people are beginning to understand that local does make a difference. You know, it's not the cheapest. I can't compete with what's outside a grocery store or a gas station in those big, you know, those 24 packs,
right.
$3.29 for 24 half liters. You know, I pay more for that in my inventory costs. So I'm not going to, that's not what I sell. That's not what we sell. It's a higher quality product and it's local, and that's not the cheapest.
I understand.
So luckily enough, people are beginning to understand that again.
And, you know, there's a lot of, we were talking about this during the break there for a minute, a lot of companies that use you guys for custom logos. I've seen those. A lot of people.
Right.
I've seen them, you know, in fact, some people here locally that I know of has had them. And you can do that. That's a thing that you all can get with people. If a business is listening or an organization and wants to talk to you about that, they can contact you to talk about having your own logo on the label, which is pretty cool.
Well, that's what we did when Coke and Pepsi got in the bottled water business in the mid-90s. I mean, boy, they took over the market within 2 years. Mm-hmm. So we went this different route, which they can't do smaller runs. Of course, we can. So that's where we got kind of into the advertising on the water bottle route. And it's great.
The hauling. Let me go back to the storage for just a moment.
Yes.
I meant to ask you, and I should have at that time, what kind of variety of things do we find stored down there?
The storage company, when that engineer said you've got to control the water, and we got off on the water path, about a year later, a sister from Atlanta came up with her husband and started to work. And then a couple of years after that, another sister from Atlanta came up. And at one time, four of the five of us were working underground. And we didn't do much with the storage company for about 5 years. And then we got back to it. And the sister from Atlanta, Gail, kind of took the storage company on. And we started storing documents for corporations, for law firms, whoever. Everybody had, at the time, paper documents. So the other nice thing about it that Dad understood was we just poured concrete as the business grew. So you get another concrete, needed a little more rack space, so you poured another section of concrete between some of the columns, put some racks up, and there you go. So in 36 years, we have finally poured all the concrete that we originally enclosed in 1982.
Okay.
So we have it racked, and there are about 450,000 boxes of records.
So all those lime lines are gone.
Yes. They are covered.
450,000. Is it just documents, though?
Documents.
That's all you store?
We have a couple of customers. We've stored wine and through the years.
But no, like vehicles?
Store in the winter boats and motorhomes.
Oh, yeah?
Come in outside the lighted, dehumidified area where the records are.
Right.
Outside, that's a whole two-thirds of the cave we don't use, so people store their boats in motorhomes over the winter.
That's a great idea.
You don't have to winterize them.
Yeah.
You know, they get a little dusty, but that's, you know, that's it.
That's a really good idea.
And then we also got into record storage industry change from paper to digital and then to online. We built vaults where we store active computer backup tapes, and then the tapes went to online, so now we have a data center called Subtac where you can store online to us. Backup online to us. There's several different options. And talk about safe. Oh, my goodness. If something happens to your records underground, there's nobody above ground that wants them.
Right.
You know, they're gone.
What would Dad think if he could look right now? If he could come back for an hour and walk into the quarry, what would he... You know what? I'm going to tell you what I think he would say. And I didn't even know the man.
Right.
Based on what you told me about him, I think the first thing out of his mouth is he'd look at you guys and say, good job.
Oh. Well,
I mean, thanks. Because you all have continued to be innovative just like he was to get right. you to that point.
Right.
So you can definitely tell that you got mm-hmm. something from Dad. But to think, in the story you've told today, all the things that he just kind of come up with that, let's try this, let's do that. And that's what right. you've done.
Right. Actually.
That's what you've
my
done.
Thought was, my first thought was, well, he'd say, you're still here. You're still here. No.
And you didn't have to go back to mushrooms.
Little things that you could never have planned. You can write all the business plans in the world.
Sure.
And you won't come up with this one. That you could start two companies underground. Mm-hmm. One be a water company that in the summer, it's their peak business. So it requires your time and attention in the summer, and you make the money in the summer. Then that industry kind of settles down during the winter, and during the winter, you're storing boats and motorhomes. So mm-hmm. before we got into the records even, we got into the boat and motorhome mm-hmm. storage. So the two seasons were covered, but with two completely different companies.
It was kind of the perfect storm, wasn't it?
Well, it was, and it came out of the blue.
And for that too. Place to be used in such a manner, it's nice that it's not just sitting there as a big hole in the ground,
right.
continuing to be a place where cars are stripped and parties are held.
Right.
Is it available for public to come and see your place?
It's not really.
Okay.
We're not set up for public tours.
Yeah.
We used to give a lot of tours with Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts.
Yeah.
And then as we got more into the document business and
right.
the data center, you know, it doesn't mesh too well.
Yeah. I'm amazed at this story. I just did not know a lot of this stuff, even though I've always known about Highbridge Springwater being down there. I'm interested in one thing on your label that I'm going to let you to brag about a little bit. You've got mm-hmm. a little logo on here that looks pretty cool. NWBOC?
Oh, National Women Business Owners.
Yeah.
Yes. And Women Owned Small Business. That is not an insignificant certification. That was a major ordeal to mm-hmm. go through mm-hmm. to have that certification. You know, they're very adamant that people don't get that just so you can get a contract. You know, you have to prove that women are actively running mm-hmm. and managing that business. So we completed that with all five, you know, women owners. I thought, well, this will be a breeze, but
it's
more than that. You know,
yeah.
they really want to know that your women are actively involved. So we did it, and we got certified.
I'm assuming that this water goes beyond state lines.
Through the wholesale grocery companies,
yeah.
it does. Not surprisingly, our first customer is Lower Grocery Company, and they go through Tennessee, Indiana, Ohio, mm-hmm. Illinois. It goes in all the states around us. At one point, it went all the way to South Carolina, that
okay.
area. But as the industry changed, more and more people got in it. You know, our distribution area became a little bit smaller.
Mm-hmm.
But through the wholesale grocery companies, we're still in probably 8 states.
Cool.
Through the 5 gallons that we deliver off trucks, we have a warehouse in London. We have one in Richmond, soon to be incorporated into Wilmore.
Mm-hmm.
We have a great distributor in Danville, Harrodsburg area. He's been with us for 30 years. And another one in Frankfort, who's been with us about the same amount of time. So we cover central Kentucky well. We're picking up new people in western Kentucky,
mm-hmm.
LBH, Dr. Pepper, Clark Distributing, a Coke.
Oh, yeah.
Distributor is doing 5 gallons for us in western Kentucky. We're growing.
Good. You know, people, the nice thing about this is it's right here. This is one of those things, and I think through this program we have found so many things that are unique to Jessamine County. The cool thing about this story is that you've got this successful business right here in our county that started because a man was curious about where a truck was going full of horse muck.
Right.
Where else can you find any start? But it has succeeded, and it succeeded because not only of your all's hard work, but mainly because of what the man upstairs gave us in this county.
Yes.
He placed there in this particular place on earth, this mm-hmm. place that could be quarried, that had this water that could be bottled for people to enjoy.
Right.
And for storage. I mean, it's just, and it's here, and it's
right.
part of us, and I appreciate the fact. Of course, it's not a business that you can just up and move.
Right.
That's the good thing, because
right.
we're always going to have you, because you got to have it here.
Right.
But the fact that you have drawn attention to Jessamine County and to Highbridge in particular, because this stuff's known everywhere.
Well, thanks.
And so you've done a good job, and your dad did a great job.
Then you had people like the people at the bank. And, you know, the people of Jessamine County and Wilmore, you know, Claudia Frios used to be F&M Golf,
Lord, yes.
Mr. Fitch at Fitch's IGA.
Yeah.
I mean, all those people were just as helpful and nice as they could be in those days when they were looking at you like, you're doing what?
Yeah.
You're bottling water? Okay. Yeah. you know, they were all supportive, and, you know, people in Jessamine County and Nicholasville, the banks and the county court clerks, everybody just smiled and kind of shook their heads, going, okay.
Yeah, bring it on. There's two things that I'm really glad of. First off, not that I'm glad of. Let me back up. There's one thing I'll say and one thing I'm glad of. I'll say that if First National Bank was still in business, they probably would have been very sad that they didn't go to a committee.
Right.
The thing I'm glad of, and he's a friend of mine, and I can say this, is I'm tickled to death that Clay Corman decided not to buy that place.
I am too. Thanks, Clay. I love him. I tell him that every time I see him.
Exactly. That was a great contribution to our county, Clay. Linda, I appreciate you coming in. This has been so very interesting. I've learned so much about this place that I didn't know and probably could have found out, but it just, you know, it's a company, and now that I know more about it, it makes it more special, and I hope it does to our listeners too. Highbridge Springwater. If you want more information, just Google them. They've got a great website. You can find out all about it, but I guarantee you that you've probably enjoyed their product somewhere along the line. You may have had it out of a water cooler and didn't even realize it, because it's everywhere too. It's in my office, as a matter of fact. Highbridge Springwater in Highbridge, Kentucky. Kentucky proud, but Jessamine County proud more than that.
That's right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
My thanks to Linda Griffin for coming in this morning and giving us the history of Highbridge Springwater, a great company in our county. I appreciate you coming in also. We'll do it again next Saturday morning at 11 as well. And don't forget, I'm here every weekday morning from 6 to 8, getting you up and going on Jess FM 105.9.